Hi, I'm Femi Oke. This episode of The Stream is inspired by a new Oxfam report called Profiting from Pain. Oxfam found that during our global pandemic, every 30 hours, a new billionaire is created. At the same time, at least 1 million people have been pushed into extreme poverty. So today we're unpacking Oxfam's report and also ask if pandemic profiteers have a responsibility to make sure that they help people who have suffered during the pandemic.
The top 1% in the world now possess more than $200 trillion. And we are really on the way on a very unsaved world. But I think that we millionaires really have the responsibility to give back, because we have to remember there's not sort of thing that a self-made man. We have all gained our wealth through the society, through good roads, infrastructure, good workers, and so on. So we are obligated to give back.
Let's meet your panel, who are ready to talk about extreme wealth and what should be done with that extreme wealth. Julia, Irit, Achal, welcome to The Stream. Julia, please introduce yourself and tell our audience very briefly your connection with extreme wealth.
Hello, yes. So my name is Julia Davis and I'm a member of Patriotic Millionaires UK. We're a group of people who have come together to raise the issue of the very imperative need to increase tax on wealthy people. Mm-hmm. So to join our group, you need to be a multimillionaire and not necessarily as wealthy as our Chancellor of the Exchequer, who isn't really listening to us at the moment, but you do need to be in a position that you would have to pay the kind of wealth tax that we're calling for.
All right, the Chancellor of the Exchequer in the United Kingdom is the Minister of Finance. He has a lot of money. Irit, hello, welcome to The Stream. Introduce yourself and say very briefly your connection with extreme wealth.
Sure, and thank you for having me. My name is Irit Tamir, and I work in Oxfam America, which is part of the broader Oxfam International Confederation. And my focus is on the private sector, and our mission really is to fight inequality in order to eliminate poverty. And so more and more our focus has been on how we reduce inequality in order to meet our mission.
Good to have you. And welcome back, Achal. Always lovely to have you on The Stream. Your connection to extreme wealth, and reintroduce yourself to our audience, please.
Hello, Femi. I'm Achal Prabhala. I live and work out of Bangalore in India, but I'm here in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, where I'm working currently. My connection to extreme wealth is that the extreme wealth created in the pharmaceutical industry in the West has led consequently to the loss of life, or at least the lack of availability of life-saving medicines to people in countries that I work in and represent. And it's been a bitter relationship with extreme wealth. And what that's led me to is to understand the role that monopolies play in this, not just in the pharmaceutical industry, but elsewhere, as a symptom of this grotesque concentration of wealth and power.
All right. You've met the panel. You can be part of our discussion as well. On YouTube, the comment section is live. Put your comments, your questions for our guests and be part of today's show. This idea, Irit, of a billionaire being created every 30 hours, how long does it normally take for a billionaire to be created? Is it some kind of speeded up process because of the pandemic? Because that is pretty shocking.
It is. And look, we've been living with inequality now for quite some time, but the pandemic did supercharge how quickly billionaires are being created. So just to give you another point of context, billionaires have made more in the last 24 months of the pandemic than they did in the last 23 years. So this gives you some idea, right, of just how quickly billionaires are accumulating wealth. And it's growing exponentially. And this is really troubling because at the same time that this is happening, we are seeing nearly a quarter of a billion people being pushed into extreme poverty. Right. And that means hunger for many, many people.
Julie, would you mind, because I love to hear you say this, just say out loud what a billion actually means, because it is so much. Go ahead.
I know. I keep feeling the need to say this because a billion and a million, they sound the same, don't they?
Yeah.
But they are so very different. 1,000 million, that's what a billion is. $1,000 million. That's the, you know, someone that has $1 billion. And that's just a huge sum of money, which most people just cannot, you know, really imagine what they would do with that sum of money. And one of the questions that we've been considering at Patriotic Millionaires is, can somebody have too much money? And I've been thinking about that over the last couple of days. And I think, yes, they can. And what's indicators that someone has too much money? Well, perhaps one of them is that the only thing that they can think of to spend their huge sums of money on is getting a bigger super yacht than another billionaire buddy or traveling to space for fun. And we live in a climate crisis, and that is absolutely intricately connected to poverty. I'm sure that, you know, Oxfam will back me up on this. You know, we are only going to be suffering a lot more poverty, a lot more extreme, you know, food crises, you know, health crises. Everything's going to be exacerbated by that. And so if you have someone that has so much wealth that all they can think of doing with that wealth, these things which are just exponentially contributing to this already terrifying crisis that we are facing.
Acha, I'm just thinking about some of the pharmaceutical new billionaires that have been created during a time of one of the worst times in our history, in living memory, for the whole world. I know that we've spoken about this before, but we're really focusing in on where did their wealth come from? How did they get so rich in just a couple of years?
The perverse thing about the pandemic is that one handful of new billionaires that were created out of the pandemic are the CEOs of BioNTech, which is the company in Germany that created the vaccine that Pfizer gives you in the UK and in the United States. And the CEO of Moderna, who is French, his name is Stéphane Bancel, who is an American resident. And these three CEOs did something extraordinary in the pandemic. They created two mRNA vaccines using messenger RNA technology that work in general better than any of the other vaccines in the market, which is why we get them in Europe and in the United States. And they created a revolution in technology because these vaccines are easier to make than any of the vaccines we've had prior to the pandemic. There's just one problem with them is that they're not available anywhere outside of Europe and the United States. I work in three countries, Brazil, South Africa, and India. Brazil and South Africa now, finally, much later than Europe and the US, have access to Pfizer vaccines. India, a country with 1.3 billion people, about a sixth of humanity lives in India where I live, has zero access to mRNA vaccines. And so when you look at who gets the benefit of this extraordinary technology, this extraordinarily lucrative technology as well, it's incredibly perverse to put these things together because I've lost loved ones in the pandemic in India, in South Africa as well, partly due to the delay in getting vaccines there. And you juxtapose that with this extraordinarily astounding new wealth that's been created in the pandemic on the basis of a life-saving good that is being purposely denied to everyone who could get one. I find that really, really perverse, and I'm astonished we can live with it.
Yeah.
Can I just add to that? Because I completely agree. And, you know, to add a little bit more color here, 40 new pharma billionaires since the pandemic, 40. Because of companies like Moderna and Pfizer, who are, by the way, making $1,000 profit every second just because they have this monopoly control over COVID-19 vaccines. And this is despite the fact that the development was supported by billions of dollars of public investments. I mean, this is one of the things I think we need to really consider when we think about inequality and how billionaires make their money, as one of your, I think, guests pointed out, it is built off the infrastructure, off the public investments that all of us pay for through our taxes. And yet, billionaires are not contributing to the tax revenue in the same way as everyday working people.
All right, Iris,
and then,
Iris,
sure.
Yeah, Iris, I'm just thinking here because we're talking about billionaires as if they are nameless people. But some of the wealthiest people have made more money through agriculture and food during the pandemic. Tell us one story so we can put a face on the billions. Eric, very briefly.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, happy to. If we look at food, billionaires, 62 new food billionaires have been created as a result of the pandemic and this now food crisis. And people like James Cargill. Mr. Cargill was probably at Davos, potentially celebrating with all the other billionaires who've done so well during this time. His family is the 11th richest family in the world. They own the majority of Cargill, which is one of four companies, that control over 70% of the global market of agricultural commodities, right? These are commodities like wheat and other grains that are critical food staples for so many people living around the world. Their wealth grew by almost $20 million every day since the start of the pandemic. Right. So each day they were making $20 million. Their profits were $5 billion in 2021, which was the biggest they had ever made, and they're expected to exceed those profits this year. They went from having 8 billionaires before the pandemic to now having 12 billionaires since the pandemic.
All right.
These are real people that are literally profiting off the pain of many, many people.
So what we're looking
at... Can I jump in there?
Yeah, please, Julia, go ahead. Yeah, anytime.
I think it's really good, to that background, to put into context, how working people are faring in comparison to multimillionaires and billionaires. So in the UK, we've been lobbying for a wealth tax. We put forward a very reasonable proposal for a wealth tax, which would have kicked in on wealth above $5 million. That was rejected. It wasn't considered. And at the same time, national insurance, which is a particular form of taxation, which only people only pay national insurance on income that they receive from working. They don't receive it from income that they receive on wealth, which is what a lot of multimillionaires and billionaires will receive. That was totally rejected. And so instead of taking a contribution from the wealthiest in society to tackle the food crisis that we are facing here in the UK, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, we now have, that increase in billionaires has been coincided with an increase in food banks in the UK. Shameful, absolutely shameful. It's also an increase in people who are working extremely hard and are still unable to pay their families. So we have these billionaires increasingly, just gathering in more and more of the world's wealth. And at the same time, people are working really, really hard in countries that should be wealthy for all, like the UK, and they cannot feed their families, even though they're working all the hours that they can manage.
Actually, I'm just thinking about one of the things that I know you focus on are monopolies and the idea that wealth is being concentrated in a way that it wasn't in the past. What are you seeing? What can you share with us?
One of the really fascinating things for me about solutions to this crisis of burgeoning inequality, I think, and it's interesting that Julia just said this, and Oxfam has pointed this out several times, of course, is this idea of progressive taxation, which, of course, I support. I think that this is one very good way to try to curb this inequality. But it is, of course, treating the symptom rather than addressing the root of that problem. And I think the root of that problem in history, and especially today, lies in a kind of grotesque concentration of wealth and power, which is often a result of a legally granted or an accidental monopoly. There are no accidental monopolies, of course, and these monopolies are very, very intentional. But they haven't been granted a monopoly in the way that in the pharmaceutical industry companies are through patents, for instance. When we think about monopolies in general, so if we talk to ordinary people about monopolies and we go out and say, what do you think? You think a monopoly is good? The instinctive answer is no. It's bad for the economy. It's bad for society. Economists have worked for decades against the idea of monopolies. We all understand them instinctively as things that are bad for us, and yet we have so many of them. This is astonishing, right? And I think one way to address the root causes of this truly insane inequality that we see before us is to take the idea of regulation of monopolies seriously. Is first to reconsider what we think of as legal monopolies, why we have them, and see if they have any place or whether they need to have a readjusted place in society. And then to look at the kinds of accidental monopolies we have, like in the tech industry, for instance, whether it's Google in search or whether it's Amazon as far as shopping goes. We need to be able to have the muscle to take on these extremely valuable companies who employ hundreds of thousands of people and have a kind of extraordinary political clout as a result. Mm-hmm. But if we had the ability, the desire, and then the muscle to create and enforce the kind of regulation that countries like the United States and Europe actually did enforce far better if you went 50 or 60 years back or even 100 years back than they can today, right? And if we took that idea seriously everywhere else in the world, because these new billionaires are not just being created in the United States and Europe, they're happening in India, where I live, we would understand and be able to tackle one very significant root of the burgeoning inequality that we see before us.
All right. Am I imagining this, Julia? But is there a reluctance to tax the wealthy? Is that in my mind or is that a reality?
Well, if it's in your mind, it's in my mind as well, because I'm definitely feeling that. So, as I said, in the run-up to the spring statement, which was the statement which our Chancellor of the Exchequer, the guy in charge, you know, with his basically, he decides where tax is being taken from in the country. Mm-hmm. In the run-up to that, we put in proposals, as I said, for a moderate wealth tax. We were at pains to explain that that would only kick in when people are really doing very, very well for themselves. If you've got more than $5 million, you're doing okay in the UK and you can afford to pay more. But we were ignored, effectively. And as I said, instead, this tax on workers was put in place. And when we raise this, we get two things thrown back at us. One is, if you want to pay more tax. Nobody's stopping you. Well, that's not tax. That's philanthropy. And I think you'll find that everybody in our group does quite a lot of philanthropy. And we're all trying to work out how to address whichever cause it is that is closest to our heart. In my case, it's climate crisis and environmental harms, which I think go to the heart of everything that anyone could possibly care about.
Julia,
if we put a tax on wealth...
I'm just saying on the screen while you're talking, we have millionaires protesting in Davos because they want to pay more tax. Carry on, Julia.
Absolutely, absolutely. So as I said, we say that we'd like to be taxed. The response that we've had to that, which I think is quite puerile, to be honest, is that we can pay more tax if we want to, but that's not going to address anything. That's our mate Phil there from Patriotic Millionaires UK. It won't help anything if just a few of us pay a bit of extra tax.
Yeah.
What we need is a systematic taxation of wealth, and that will address the multiple crises that we are facing, both in the UK and across the world, because obviously we need this to happen at a global level.
Yeah.
The other thing that we get thrown at is if the UK imposed a wealth tax, well, all the wealthy people will just go abroad. Well, what I say to that is, you know, if you really care about your country so little that you're willing to move abroad to avoid contributing to, you know, solving all the problems that we face, you know, all the problems that the NHS is facing, the horrendous...
you've made all the arguments because you hear them all of the time. It's the stereotypical arguments for why the wealthy can't pay tax. And you're saying, as somebody who is in that privileged position, if I may say so, that these are not good, solid reasons. Let me show to our audience what an annual wealth tax could do. What are the possibilities of an annual wealth tax? It could generate as much as $2.52 trillion a year. It's enough to lift 2.3 billion people out of poverty, make enough vaccines for the world, deliver universal health care, social protection for everyone in middle, lower income countries. That is on an annual wealth tax. Earlier, we spoke to Jalia. And Jalia said, though, there is a problem with asking people to pay a tax when they're already extremely wealthy. And she brought up a couple of issues. Here she is.
The ICTD research that we've conducted in African countries so far finds that wealthy individuals in these countries are under tax. And it's not that it can't be done. Many of these countries have enabling laws in place. The wealthy are publicly known, and they invest in very visible ways, most notably in land and buildings. The challenge is political will, either because the wealthy are politically connected or they are politicians. In a 3-year study that we conducted in Uganda, for example, we found that out of 70 government officials who own big businesses, less than 2% of those individuals were paying personal income taxes.
Julia already pushed back some of those problems with the wealthy wanting to pay tax or trying to evade tax. So I want to bring in Alex Cobham here, who is very appreciative of what Oxfam, the conversation that Oxfam has started. Here he is.
Extreme wealth inequality hurts us all. It damages our societies. It weakens our economies. It corrupts our systems of political governance and representation. And it's speeding up the rate at which we're burning the very planet that we live on. The measures that Oxfam propose make complete sense.
Eric.
Can I just jump in here?
Go ahead. As we put the recommendations up for what Oxfam are suggesting. But Ajel, you go ahead.
I want to just say that I so support this idea of a progressive set of taxation, tax laws that can help generate more revenue for governments. I think what governments do with that, what states do with that, is also really important to address the root causes of these burgeoning billionaires.
Good point.
And I'll give you an example of what I mean. I work across India, Brazil, and South Africa, and I was looking at that list of billionaires. Now, several of the billionaires in healthcare in India own hospital chains. So this is a very specific sector of the healthcare industry. They run hospital chains, right? There are no billionaires in South Africa or Brazil who run hospital chains. And that is because Brazil and South Africa have excellently functioning public health systems that are very well funded, that a large income spectrum of people in Brazil and South Africa use, right? Whereas in India, we have a very poorly functioning healthcare system, which only the very poor and the absolutely desperate use, whereas everybody else from lower middle class upwards will use private healthcare and private hospitals, right? And so to the extent that the state actually just performs its duty and does what it needs to. Yeah. Look, the state doesn't have to run the equivalent of Netflix to keep people entertained in a pandemic. Netflix made a lot of money out of the pandemic as well, right? And so, you know, it's not like the state has to step in and do every single thing to take care of its citizens. But if it were to address the very basic things that it could do for its people in terms of basic healthcare, basic education, you would remove the opportunity to create a whole new class of dozens of billionaires in those industrial sectors because the state is actually doing its job.
All right, Achal, I'm just going to finish up with some recommendations. Irit, I'm going to make you do something in just a minute if I can. Not only did Oxfam say these pandemic profiteers are making the world a worse place for many people who suffered during the pandemic, you also had some recommendations. So it's a good place to end the show. Let me share them with you again, and you can help us understand what do you think is the most important, the most tangible out of these recommendations that is most doable? Because you really are challenging the wealthiest people in the world to pay up. Irit, final thoughts.
Yeah, look, we absolutely have to start taxing the extreme wealth that exists, and we have to do it on a regular basis. So that annual wealth tax is going to be the systemic solution that we need in place throughout. Mm-hmm. The other two solutions really are responding to the moment in time.
Right.
Right, the pandemic, the crisis.
Thank you so much. Irit and Achal and Julia, there's so much more to talk about, but thank you so much for understanding and helping us to understand how people are profiting from pain and then maybe what some of the solutions are for that. Thanks for joining us. I'll see you next time. Take care, everybody.